This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters right now, the show where we discuss issues driving the press and making headlines around the world. I'm Lynn Mark with Wang Xiaoning, and today we're going to be taking a look at the fissures which have appeared in the PKR party, particularly between the camps of Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim and Dato' Sri Azmin Ali. And to help us do that, we have with us in studios today P. Gunasekaram, independent business analyst. Thank you for joining us, Guna. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you've written an article entitled A Fragile Peace in PKR, But For How Long?, particularly taking a look at the concessions made by Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, first of all, in the sex video scandal that has been dominating headlines over the past few weeks. Perhaps you could talk us through that, first of all. Why do you think he made the concession of admitting that Azmin was not the person in the video, even before he was officially cleared?
I think it was a sort of an olive branch because there were a lot of fissures within the PKR itself. So it was more a tactic to bring people together, and there was an almost immediate response from Azmin to that. So it is just to bring down the temperature of the differences which were boiling up over the surface. So that was the basic thing. But it was a strange concession to make, considering that the police, the IGP publicly stated that the video was genuine, but they could not identify the participants in the video, which again is a bit strange because there is the technology available to do that, you know, and it is not a very difficult thing to establish that unless the video was very bad. You know? So one waits to see what exactly is the final conclusions of the police.
Do you think there will be further discussions or eventually, you know, like a lot of things in Malaysia that will kind of peter out after a while?
Well, I think we have to wait and see for that one, you know. But I suppose if the final conclusion is that we cannot identify the people in the video, that would be a very strange conclusion indeed. And it will again raise all kinds of speculation among the Malaysian public. You know, I'm one of those who believe that private matter should be private. But in this case here, the case having come so far, and the act of homosexuality considered to be a crime in Malaysia, I think, you know, people want to know what exactly is the final outcome. You know? So if he's going to be cleared, let it be cleared, or if not, establish clearly what is the final outcome. Who are the participants in this video? It's I don't think it is a matter of just identifying the conspirators the behind this. It is also to establish the truth or otherwise of the video.
But essentially what this video was, it was like a match to Tinder, right? And that Tinder was this existing factionalism that had been growing within PKR. So how, and since then we've seen how deep some of these fractures go, but how much should we be concerned about PKR going forward? Is PKR truly going to fall apart over the issue, or is there going to be some kind of unifying factor at the end of the day? What have you been seeing on the ground?
I think a lot of it would depend on the outcome of the investigation as well. So if it is found that Azmin is not the person in the tape, then paradoxically, you will have even more differences within PKR as a result of that, because this would have been thought of as a conspiracy by other PKR leaders to get rid of Azmin. So that would be the situation. Whereas if Azmin was found to be the person in the tape, then I don't think that many PKR MPs are going to stand behind him and say we will support him nevertheless. So it might be a case where Azmin goes off the scene, and then there might well be greater unity within PKR after that.
So how much should we read into things like Azmin not being present at the recent leaders' retreat in Port Dickson?
I think one has to conclude that there was a reluctance by him to be at that retreat. So I think, which is why I think at the retreat itself that Anwar sort of backtracked and said that, well, I was answering a question. And I only said that if he's the party, if they can identify him properly as the person in the video, then he should step down from the cabinet. And then he said, although it has not been established, that Azmin is not the person. He accepted that Azmin is not the person in the video. So that was a bit strange because you are running ahead of yourself there.
And PKR Vice President Tian Chua has also very recently issued a call for the party to stop its infighting, and it very much seems as if this is the disunity is deeper than we might expect, judging from his statement. So you've also said the numbers in the different camps, so Azmin camp versus Anwar camp, they are not very clear. But what is your sense of how deep this factionalism goes? Is it significant enough to really hurt the party if these?
I think it's already hurting the party quite a bit. The underlying the source of the difference is whether Azmin will bypass Anwar to become the next PM. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So that has been speculated about a lot. And the way that Azmin has been saying things, it looks like he is closer to the PM than he is to Anwar, you know. And the kind of statements Azmin's camp has been saying about the investigations seem to be indicating that they think that Anwar is the conspirator, and that has its own implications as a result. There is definitely a huge rift between Azmin and Anwar. And if Azmin is closer to Mahathir as a result, then that could result in a rift between Mahathir and Anwar as well, you know. So the question of whether Azmin will become a prime minister instead of Anwar will continue to be raised as a result, you know.
So who would be the beneficiary then from this unrest? Is it Tun Mahathir, or is it other Pakatan Harapan coalition members, the opposition maybe?
It looks like the opposition will benefit from this for certain, you know. There will be implications on G15 when that comes. And the other person who may have some short-term gains is Mahathir himself, you know. So it will strengthen the belief, whether rightly or wrongly, that you still need Mahathir to lead the country. So that would help Mahathir.
And Mahathir this time exonerated Azmin like very quickly, right? Mm. Is this any indication of anything? I mean, in the past, he hasn't been quite so fast to forget and forgive.
Well, he has said that he does not want to be part of the conspiracy to topple Azmin. But so, does that mean that he is not interested in the truth or otherwise of the video? So that is one area that he has not said anything about. It looks like he is leaning towards Azmin, definitely a bias towards Azmin, without the facts being known itself.
Another interesting thing that has happened over the weekend is Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim. He was announced at a recent economic symposium in Parliament as the next Prime Minister. And I think that was one of the first times that he's been actively announced as such at an event. Is this him trying to reclaim that position of power in the aftermath?
I seriously doubt that very much. I've witnessed him being addressed as such at other congregations. So it's not, I don't think it's got anything to do with it. It's those people who are inviting him who are doing this now. So I mean, that does not mean that he will automatically become the next PM, but he keeps on, he as well as Wan Azizah constantly say that Mahathir has made his promise that he will be the next PM. And that all this depends on what is more uncertain is the time period before this happens.
Yeah, in relation to that time period, it seems to be like a bit of a moving goalpost, right? I think initially it was 2 years, and then now it's when it's ready. I mean, what does that mean actually?
The common conception over that is that if he announces a date, then he'll become a lame duck prime minister. Although I don't agree with that argument. Why would he become a lame duck prime minister if he announces that? Yeah? So that will provide a lot more certainty as to things, and it will quell once and for all this uncertainty over whether Anwar will become prime minister or not. Yeah? The original belief is that one of the reasons that Azmin Ali was made economic affairs minister is to sort of like neutralize Anwar, and at the same time offer an alternative to Anwar in terms of the next prime minister. Yeah?
Just in case Dato' Sri Anwar proves to be unpopular, perhaps.
Yes. So, I mean, it would then be easy to justify and say, well, things have changed, you know, that this is a changing situation and we can't have him as prime minister anymore. So those kind of things. And nobody that I talk to is absolutely certain that Anwar will become prime minister, although the way that things are playing out right now, that may be the situation, you know, because if you look at the numbers, if DAP and PKR stick together, it is very difficult for the PM not to pass the baton on to Anwar when the time comes, you know, because he does not have the numbers to continue to be PM, even though PAS has said that they want him to continue to full term. PAS is only, I believe, 18 MPs, you know? So that's still not enough. And even if you include UMNO, it is still not enough for him to have majority support. You know?
And we'll get more into the future of PKR in the run-up to GE15 after this. Now, we're speaking with Api Gunasekaram, independent business analyst. Stay tuned to the two pressing matters here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Lynn Mark here with Wong Xiaoning, and you're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we discuss issues driving the press and making headlines around the world. Today, we're speaking with Api Gunasekaram, independent business analyst, about the fractures within the PKR party. Now, Guna, I'd also like your sense on how the PAU PKR is going to change in the run-up to GE15, because we've got about 3 years left before the next general elections, and if this kind of party infighting continues, what is PKR going to look like at the end of the day as we move into the election season?
I think, in one sense, people can say that dissent is permitted within PKR. Maybe it's a healthy thing. But this kind of difference between Azmin and Anwar is very strong.
There's dissent, and then there is this outright infighting that we've been seeing. That's not the same thing.
Mm. So, still nobody has left PKR, and there's no sign that anyone is going to leave. And so they have 50 MPs in Parliament. And there is this agreement that the power will move on to Anwar. So I think if you are talking about PKR leading Harapan into the next elections, then the prime minister has to change somewhere midstream. One should allow at least 2 to 3 years for a new prime minister to stamp his mark, you know, and take the coalition into the elections. So that is a vital process. So if Mahathir goes to full term, then he gives no opportunity for the other person to actually to make his mark and to show the country where it is headed. So I think there is still a huge lack of direction by the PKR government, you know, which is currently headed by Mahathir. There is no proper economic policy as such. You know, there is no plan. And although an Economic Action Council has been set up, I think this should have been set up within cabinet itself and make use of the various different people within the government department itself. Is it from the Prime Minister's department, from Bank Negara, from the Ministry of Finance, and so on? These people should come together and come up with a plan. So these are the people who are going to implement it. You know? So any move to give it over to a national economic or National Economic Action Council will just dilute the cabinet even more. And there have been a lot of U-turns over projects and things like that. You know? So many people do not consider the ECRL, which will still be over 40 billion and will be financed by debt from China. So these things will not have a great multiplier effect. And then other very high-level spending is also taking place. Mm-hmm. The Penang Transport Master Plan could be costing like something like 46 billion. You know? And then the Banda Malaysia project under 1NBB is being revived at a time when there is a lot of excess property, both residential as well as office development in Malaysia. So what is the plan? Where is the growth for the economy going to come from? You know? Is it all going to be centered around heavy capital expenditures?
Yeah, that's a point true, Gunnar, because we saw some numbers coming in today where we see private investment actually declining quite substantially. So it looks like if not for government spending, our economy will probably be in dire straits if you look in the next 1 or 2 years, right? So is this a function of people just not having, you know, when you see all these headlines, do you think investors think, you know, I want to hold back, I don't want to spend any capex?
I think there is still, consumption spending is still a large part of the economic growth, I think, you know. So I think it is okay for the government to spend a bit more when there is a slack in the economy. But it is the kind of projects that you spend on. MRT and LRT is okay because you need it. The traffic congestion in KL is terrible. So you need these kind of projects. But do you really need the ECRL at this point of time? So there's got to be a lot of thinking about that. You can spend your way out of a possible slowdown, you know, but the effects will come back to bite you if you don't choose the right kind of projects. So, and then you can get mired in very high levels of debt as a result, and very few productive investments which are actually generating efficiency within the economy.
Yeah, the other feedback I think a lot of foreign brokers have is when they go marketing and they try to sell Malaysia Inc. right to their clients overseas, is that there seems to be this uncertainty with regards to who's the next PM and all the policies that follow, right? Yeah. So do you think announcing a PM earlier is probably a solution to this? Because at the moment, KLCI is like the most unloved market in Asia. We are still down 2.5% year-to-date, unlike every other ASEAN market.
Yes, say anything that you want, but there is considerable amount of political uncertainty in Malaysia. The market has already factored in the change in government from a kleptocracy to a government which is likely to be much more decent. So that has already been factored in. So for the next market push, you have to show that you have a plan, that you have a succession plan, you have an economic plan. And the market has to be convinced that you can carry this out, you know, and that you are not encouraging cronyism again. So there are a lot of questions about whether cronyism is coming back into play or not in the way that the contracts are being awarded, you know. Mahathir himself has said that there will be negotiated tenders. So the open tenders that was more or less promised during the previous, during the elections is not panning out totally. Many things have been done in secrecy. Even your Council of Eminent Persons report on the economy and other things is under the Official Secrets Act. So why this kind of secrecy for these kind of things? You know, so much of the reform which is promised has not taken place as yet.
So speaking of confidence and conviction, right, one of the other things that we've been hearing here and there is that the Pakatan Harapan coalition itself, there are some factions within it that lack the confidence that the government, the current government, will be able to survive GE15. So have you been seeing that on the ground in terms of within the PKR movement? Is there some concern?
I think in the longer term, there is also a very real danger of that. I remember looking at one of the newspapers, there was an analysis of how many more seats the opposition would have won if UMNO and PAS had been together. And you're talking about a swing of at least 20 parliamentary seats. You know? So that's a pretty high number. And if the kind of strong support that that Harapan enjoyed previously is not there anymore, then there is a real danger of losing GE15. So until if these things, the promised reforms do not take place, and if the public does not feel that they are getting a good deal from the new government that they had, then a revamped sort of like a revamped UMNO could pose a major threat. Say an UMNO which does not have, say, tainted people at the top, like say Najib or Zahid, for instance, you know, and there's a new breed of people who are taking over from UMNO, then that could potentially be a major threat to Harapan. Harapan cannot afford to take the position for granted. They cannot assume that they're going to win the next elections. So they should actually start showing some results, or then we will regress back to a government which may not in the long term be as good as Harapan potentially could be with all the problems that they have at this point of time.
So with this PKR infighting also basically exacerbating the problem, right? Reducing confidence in the Pakatan Harapan administration.
Certainly.
Are you seeing a PKR member starting to pull back, say, by their time in to wait ahead of GE15?
In terms of what are they holding back?
In terms of perhaps withholding their support from certain camps, maybe staging the way for comebacks after GE15 if they are no longer associated with the Pakatan Harapan administration.
Yeah, I think the succession plan is vital for this. You know, because I think Mahathir is an interim prime minister.
Mm.
You know, so everybody agrees on that. So what happens when the next prime minister comes in? And then that next prime minister, which most likely will be from PKR, will have to set the tone of what the coalition is going to be moving forward. So that is what I think one of the things that the market wants to see, you know, who this person is and what kind of policies the person is going to have. You know, but in the meantime, I don't think the PKR will break apart. But if Azmin is not the person in the tape, then there would be quite a bit of tension going forward. You know, if it is known to be him and if he has to step aside, then I think the damage to PKR will likely be limited because most people are not likely to go with Azmin under such a circumstance. Mm.
Because, you know, 3 years is a very long time in politics, right, Gunnar? So do you think there will
all
be...
short, depending
all
on
short,
how you look
depending.
At it.
So do you see any new factions developing in PKR, or would Azmin and Anwar actually kiss and make up, you know?
It's pretty difficult to say. No, I mean, how do you come back from such a situation? But in Malaysia, these kind of things has happened, you know? Look at Mahathir and Anwar, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the person who put him in jail... was his ally, you know, in getting rid of Najib, you know, the kleptocratic government. So I suppose anything is possible in politics, you know. So if there can be many combinations, permutations, and combinations. If Azmin feels that he's going to become the next PM after Anwar, then he might say, okay, you know, you promise me, you know, but promises can be broken in politics as well.
Or perhaps there will be the resurgence of a combined enemy, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend in politics as well.
Yeah, but the enemy of your enemy may not be your enemy all the time.
Nothing is ever certain in politics. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Gunnar.
We've been
speaking with P. Gunnar Segaram, independent business analyst. And that's all we have on Pressing Matters on The Morning Run today. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news after this, followed by Enterprise at BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.